Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Rolling Stone executive editor Nathan Brackett. I'm here with Brittany Spanos. We're going to start with our What We're Listening To section. How you doing, Brittany?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. So the first song we're going to talk about is from the lead singer of The Walkmen, Hamilton Lighthouser, and a member of Vampire Weekend, or I should say former member of Vampire Weekend, yeah. Rostam. Mm-hmm. I'm loving this song. It's called A Thousand Times.
I've had that dream a thousand times.
Hamilton and Rostam are going to be releasing a joint album in September called I Had a Dream That You Were Mine. And it's actually the opening lyric to A Thousand Times. And they have released a few songs already, and it's really sort of pulling together all of these sounds and influences that they've been doing with Hamilton as part of The Walkmen and Rostam coming from Vampire Weekend and a lot of his production work. And it's interesting to see how that fused together, and A Thousand Times is definitely my favorite from the collection.
It's kind of like a perfect merge, I think, of like The Walkmen and Vampire Weekend, or a lot of things that I like about both bands. Like, you know, obviously two big bands from the early 2000s, and Hamilton Lighthouser is one of like the better shouters from that era, you know, real passionate front man. This song is about getting older. It's got a great video too, where like he starts off as a child and the kind of the whole band gets older over the course of the song. And it's just like a really romantic, loping, like kind of good time song.
Yeah.
And I'll be excited to hear more from this album.
Yeah, and with like the early 2000s sort of bent to it, it's like, it kind of reminded me of The Strokes a little bit, with this sort of teasing you with this almost ballad sound and then going into his like screaming and sort of more passion. And
it definitely builds. Yeah. It has this like kind of crescendo in the same way that The Strokes have. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like this modern twist on like a power ballad. And just a, sort of a beautiful way of exploring the unrequited love that he sort of talks about in the song.
Yeah. You've also been listening to the Carly Rae Jepsen record. Can you tell me about this? So this is like a side B. It's Emotion side B,
right? So Emotion came out last year, and that album was really huge for shifting Carly Rae away from the bubblegum of Call Me Maybe and showing off her songwriting skills and production skills. And side B was a lot of the extras from the album that she had been teasing actually for a while now. She had said that she had written 40 songs for Emotion.
For those of you who have been living in the mountains somewhere, Carly Rae Jepsen, of course, did Call Me Maybe, which is like one of the biggest songs of the last decade. And then she kind of came back with a more mature record, Emotion, right, last year.
It was definitely a lot more subdued from the really big electro pop that she was doing with Call Me Maybe and a lot of her earlier music. And so she kind of came back with this really cool, subdued indie pop sound. And it's a lot of 80s influence that she has on it, a lot of Cyndi Lauper-esque like songwriting and sort of lyrical tinges to it and the sound. And it really comes across in side B. A lot of the album just sort of sounded like a lot of weird 80s pop deep cuts with like the synth sounds and the strange ethereal lyrics and everything, but yeah.
What songs are you digging on it?
I really love the song Store. The lyrics are really weird, and the song itself is just, it's probably the catchiest, most direct pop song on there. But the lyrics have this weird 90s, 80s TV trope of like someone going to the store for cigarettes and never coming back. And that's like the theme of the song, which is such a weird theme to do for a breakup song.
I think that's probably my favorite song. Because you're right, it's super catchy, but it's also a little bit offbeat.
I love weird pop songs like that, where it's sort of like you're like, oh, this is a really catchy song, and then you listen to the lyrics and it's like, oh, what are you even singing about? How is that even related to what you're trying to address? But I think that she does it really well, and it was actually an old song for her. She released it initially as part of an anti-smoking campaign in 2011.
No kidding.
So I was like looking up, I was trying to figure out more about the song, and it was like released, you know, 5 years ago as part of this anti-smoking campaign.
If this becomes a hit, it could be one of the biggest anti-smoking songs ever. So what else are you digging on the album?
I really love Cry. I mean, especially after I had just finished Stranger Things and like listening to the song, I felt like it just kind of fused with that.
So it wasn't actually on the Stranger Things soundtrack, but it does have that pure 80s vibe. Yeah, right.
So it's like, I felt like it came from that era that the show was paying tribute to.
Right.
And it's really sort of her paying tribute to a lot of that era as well with a lot of her music on side B. Right. So.
Well, all right. Well, Carly Rae Jepsen, she's on a journey. Brittany Spanos, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
I'm not him, but I mean something to you.
And that was a little bit of Frank Ocean's Nikes from his new album, Blonde, which kicked off a new war over exclusive music between Apple and Spotify and the major labels, and has been a topic of a lot of discussion all over the music business. To go over the ins and outs of this and talk about what it means for fans, I'm here with contributing editor Steve Knopper calling in from Colorado over Skype. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Nathan, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Thanks for coming on. And Jason Newman, music news editor for RollingStone.com. What's up, Jason?
How's it going?
Hey. So, Steve, you cover this topic intensely for us. Can you catch us up to kind of where we were with these wars over exclusives up to this point, before the Frank Ocean record?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as most people know, you know, the music business is still in this transition. They were selling CDs and then iTunes downloads song by song, and now everybody is streaming. And there's this intense competition between streaming services, particularly Spotify and Apple Music. Those are really the biggest ones, but also Tidal and Rhapsody and a whole bunch of others. And so a couple of the services, particularly Apple Music and Tidal, have decided that the way they're going to get a leg up is by getting exclusive releases from major artists.
So basically that means like the Drake album will come out, but only Apple Music will have it for 2 weeks or something like that?
That's correct, with Drake. And there have been a ton of high-profile exclusives this year. There was Beyoncé's Lemonade on Tidal, and there was Rihanna on Tidal, and Kanye West was on Tidal. And then, as you said, Drake was on Apple Music, Chance the Rapper on Apple Music, on and on and on and on. So there's sort of like this kind of bidding war, this arms race to get all these different exclusives by the services so they can outdo each other.
Right. I mean, we've really entered this world where like the biggest albums in music are now only available in one place, right? For at least a week or two when they first come out.
Right, exactly. It's almost guaranteed that if you're a huge artist, you're going to have an exclusive somewhere. But that's not true with everybody. I mean, Taylor Swift didn't do it at all. Adele didn't do it at all. So everybody has their own way of releasing an album, and it's a lot different than it used to be.
Right. All right, so now what kind of set off this most recent flare-up?
Yeah, so Frank Ocean, unbeknownst to anyone, really, I mean, unless his label knew something and they're not telling us,
well, presumably his manager knew, right? Or
of course, his people knew, but I meant Frank Ocean and his people. You know, they were obviously upset with something about their record deal with Universal Music, which is the biggest record label in the world. It has 30% share of sales in the music business. And so they had one album left on the contract for Frank to deliver to Universal. And what he chose to do was kind of this video album that was not as strong, that was a little bit of a concept and probably wouldn't sell that much. He gave that to Universal as his final album. Then he turned around almost immediately and gave his other album, which was pretty sure to be some kind of hit, which was Blonde, and gave that to Apple Music outside his label deal as an exclusive. Apple was sort of, it was him and Apple putting out the record without his participation of his label.
Right. So it's just to give people at home like a sense, like he really kind of pulled a fast one. You know, he basically faked out his label.
Right.
He said that
it was a little bit punk rock, I think.
Yeah. And faked out fans, because when Endless came out, a lot of people
was the non-album.
Right. Right. And people didn't know if Endless was the same as Boys Don't Cry, which later became Blonde. And so I think he sort of, part of it was sort of the the planned marketing subterfuge of wanting to kind of keep people on their toes and keep fans on their toes as
right.
well.
And Endless was like a weird album. So basically, yep. this is like one of the most anticipated albums of the year, of the last couple of years. People have been waiting for it. And the first thing that people heard was this kind of weird side album. And then the real album, quote unquote, wasn't even on a label. It was on Apple Music, which is kind of a huge thing.
Right.
So what happened after that, Steve?
Well, after that, I mean, Universal kind of turned around. It depends on who you ask, but my sources tell me that Universal, you know, was not mad. They didn't, you know, call him back and drag him back into the office with lawyers.
Sure,
you know,
they just
said, okay, fine, here's your walking papers, but we're going to ban exclusives label-wide from now on. Nobody else on our label. And that means, you know, presumably that means Taylor Swift and Drake and Jay-Z and all the other, you know, huge superstars on Universal are never going to be able to do exclusives again.
Supposedly, like the head, sorry to break in, supposedly the head of Universal, Lucian Grange, sent around an email, right, to everybody saying that we're not going to do exclusives anymore, right?
Correct. An internal memo is how I read it. That's right.
But I wonder, like, I mean, the question would be, like, if that does go into effect and Lucian is serious about that, you know, will there be any sort of retaliation or backlash among other artists who will say, look, whatever happened with Frank, but I want to do it this way? Then it's going to come, it becomes a new leverage game between Universal and like the A-game artists, you know?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that's tricky, and you're right. That has to be played out. But one interesting thing is that many, many, surprising number of the big artists on Universal are actually not signed to Universal. And that includes Taylor Swift, who's signed with Big Machine, and Drake, who's signed with Cash Money, a lot of other examples of this. They just have distribution deals through Universal, which is kind of a technical thing. They have
so what does that mean? Like, I don't want to get too far inside baseball, yeah, but like, no, what does that actually little, mean? Yeah. Like, for
it
people at home.
It essentially means that it's more difficult for Universal to tell them what to do. They don't actually have a direct contract that is negotiated between them and Universal. There's this other player that has more clout in the deal. So Universal made this policy. You could easily see Taylor Swift, when it comes around to her next album, she wants to do an Apple exclusive, saying, you don't know me. I'm with Big Machine. We have our own people.
So basically, you're saying that Universal sent around, the head of Universal sent around this memo but about no more exclusives, but a lot of his biggest artists don't necessarily have to follow the rule, the new rule.
I'm just saying what people, does strike me as a little bit toothless, this memo. Maybe not toothless, but a little bit less power than you would think. I'm not sure how much 100% control that he has. And as you said before, you know, major artists have leverage. You know, they could say, well, fine, we just won't put out our album for a while then, or, you know, something like that.
And there's sort of the ego machinations going in where it is, you know, kind of to piggyback on what Steve said, where there's sort of the, you know, Frank kind of came in and essentially does a mic drop on Universal, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, shit, we have to, you know, we need to at least assert some sort of leverage, or perhaps imaginary leverage, depending on how you look at it. You know?
Right. I mean,
in the case of Frank Ocean, the interesting thing about that is that usually those kinds of conversations between the artist and the artist's own label happen in private. They don't usually explode all over the internet and you know, have these power moves happen publicly. So right. I found this very interesting and kind of new and different.
Right. And it definitely felt like it was entering a new level of publicity, as you said. And then, you know, about 6 days later, a report came out on Bloomberg, which was really interesting, saying that like Spotify, which kind of the biggest streaming player, and has basically, they've kind of kept above the fray. They've been saying that they actually don't do exclusives, that they just like try to have everything whenever it comes out. But then, Steve, this report said something that basically they were kind of doing this behind the scenes thing.
Right. They were supposedly, according to Bloomberg, Spotify was burying releases by artists who had exclusives on other services, particularly Apple Music. So supposedly, you know, if you had Spotify after Views, Drake's album, came out on Spotify after the exclusive, it was harder to find on the service.
Right.
You know, it took you a while longer. And that was supposedly retaliation. Now, Spotify denies that ever happened. And, you know, I haven't found anybody who really, you know, was frustrated or concerned that they couldn't find that album on Spotify when that was supposedly happening. But, you know, it's certainly possible. The competition between these services is getting kind of intense and somewhat ugly.
Right. I haven't checked that myself either, but like apocryphally, you know, there's no way Spotify can like bury a Katy Perry album, you know, where you can't find it if you search for Katy Perry, but they do have playlists.
Sure.
And they, you know, the top 40 playlists and editors picks, which get a lot of traffic, a lot of people listen to, a lot of casual listeners listen to, and they basically can say, we're not going to put you, spotlight you. In those playlists,
and,
right?
And they can certainly
say,
you know, they can't bury it to an extent, but they can certainly determine the level of promotion that it gets. And
right.
Certainly, you know, I think with A-level artists, it might be a little trickier because people are going to find them anyway.
It's not going to matter to Drake.
Right.
He's going to get his listens anyway.
But if you go into like, you know, the A-minus B kind of level artists that actually are B-level artists that need promotion and that need a little more help through Spotify, this could, I mean, if it is true, it could have, you know, some sort of detrimental effect on that. Maybe not as much as Spotify wants it to, but certainly a bit of an effect.
Right.
True. And you also have to wonder, I mean, it may be happening. I'm not denying it is. Sometimes this stuff gets ugly, but you have to wonder how far Spotify would take such a thing if they are actually doing that. I mean, we're talking about, oh, so you're going to hide Beyonce and Rihanna and Drake and Chance the Rapper and, you know, on and on and on and on. All these people have done exclusives. You know, then you're just hurting your own service. Then not as many people are going to sign up and listen.
There's a bit of cut off your nose to spite your face, I think, that's going to come in.
So I guess backing up for a minute, like, you know, how does this really affect fans? Like, why should fans, like, care about this? What does it mean to them? Jason, do you want to answer that first?
I mean, I think, you know, speaking personally from people that I've spoken to and just kind of see it, you know, on social media, it's leading to a lot of fan confusion, you know, whereas when, you know, even going back, like, 10 years ago, you would have an album would come out and it would be very easy to find. You knew exactly where it was, or if you wanted to bootleg it, that was easy to find. Now what you're seeing is, okay, so it's going to be on Apple for 24 hours. Then it's going to window for the next 2 weeks. Then it'll be on this. And I think what's going to happen is it's going to lead to more and more sort of fan confusion. My question is, to what extent do the brands care about that?
Well, you would think they would care. I mean, I think you make a great point about, like, you're right. I mean, back in the old days, it was about you put out an album and it was about just getting it as many places as possible and putting up as many billboards as you could. And I even remember, you know, people got very upset when artists started signing deals with places like Walmart. I remember the Eagles at one point put out an album only in Walmart and a lot of people objected to that. So this is really kind of a change in the way of, you know, labels and artists approaching this. Some people have said that it's going to lead to more piracy. What do you guys think of that, Steve? Do you agree?
Yeah, I do think piracy is. I mean, I've checked the numbers this year, and the sources for piracy numbers are saying that there hasn't been that much of an uptick overall in piracy this year. Although, you know, some of those records, Beyonce's Lemonade, kind of had a bump when that exclusive happened. So it is a little bit of a thing. But one beneficiary of this is kind of YouTube. Because YouTube, you know, and that's a whole other debate, but YouTube is kind of gets all this music anyway, you know, sometimes legitimately and sometimes not so legitimately. And when the Chance the Rapper album came out, you know, it was an exclusive for, I think, a week on Apple. And I already had paid. I have a Spotify $10 a month subscription, and I'd already paid, you know, $10 for the Beyonce exclusive on Tidal and $10 for the Drake exclusive. And I didn't feel like doing that anymore. So I just found this, you know, it was only up for like a day, an album stream of the Chance the Rapper album. And it had like Clairol ads in the middle of the songs, you know. So it was kind of bizarre what I was listening to, but I found a way to listen to it anyway.
Right. And obviously most, you know, if you're a 16-year-old Chance the Rapper fan, you're not going to pay $30 a month for all three streaming services. I mean, it does seem like it's got an obvious negative effect in the sense that, you know, if you're not going to pirate something or you don't want to listen to Clairol ads, you're going to have to – you're going to miss something. You're not going to be able to listen to music you want to listen to.
The tragic irony, though, is that for anyone who's ever bought a CD in their life, that is three CDs a month.
Right.
That's it.
Right. That's that true.
If someone said three CDs a month and you're like, no, I refuse to pay three CDs a month. But obviously there's been a shift in how people sort of view it.
Right. Well, I mean, that's worth talking about, too. I mean, all of us are old enough to remember those days. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's like, do you think we are in a world where people are not going to scoff at paying $10 or $15 a month?
Music. I think we're in a world where they shouldn't. But when your baseline level in 2016 is free – then $10 a month is going to seem expensive. You know, it's all obviously psychological. But like when you were at a point when $16.99 was normal for a CD, which was total bullshit because that was too high anyway, it wasn't that big a deal. But I think now, you know, I think where the industry failed, and it's obviously part of a bigger issue, is not convincing fans of the value of this. And part of the exclusives, obviously, is that's to get them in their service. Oh, you want Pablo? Well, then you have to join Tidal. You want Drake, you have to join Apple. But it's also not looking at the bigger picture of convincing people to pay for music in general,
right,
and why that's important. It's part of a much bigger conversation, but I think there's sort of been a collective failure on that part of the industry.
Right. So we've talked about like fans being potential losers in this. Who are the other losers? What about record labels? For me, it's been a kind of picture. It feels like the labels are getting less and less powerful in terms of determining artists' careers. Would you say so, Steve?
I don't know. Labels have been diminishing for a long, long time. And this is certainly not a power period for record labels compared to the CD era, certainly. We're way behind that time. But, you know, right now, all three major labels are in the middle of negotiations for content deals with Spotify. And right now, they kind of have some leverage because, you know, they have all these other services that are competing with each other. Apple Music is strong, you know, and if they want to sort of put their own terms down on Spotify and say, hey, you know, Taylor Swift comes out with a record, we only want her to be on the pay side of the service rather than the free ad-supported side, they might have a little bit more leverage now to be able to do this, because then they could say, okay, well, we're yanking all our stuff and we're going to Apple Music.
So basically,
I think labels are in a little bit more of a power position than they have been digitally for several years now.
So the labels are all re-upping their deal with Spotify. And so you're saying, your point is basically that like they may not be like the all-powerful Death Stars that they were before in the 90s, but they're getting paid more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, there was that period in the 90s, and then there was like that terrible period for the labels when Apple came in and said, we're the only game in town. You guys have to give us all your content so we can put it in the iTunes store for downloads, and we're going to dictate all the terms. It has to be 99 cents, all the different things. Apple got its way every time, and they were dominant for several years. It's not like that anymore either. The labels are more powerful now than they were in that position. So somewhere in the middle of the two.
Interesting. Well, are there any other like winners in this, like artists, managers? It seems like it's a pretty good time to be Taylor Swift. I mean, maybe any time is a good time Swift.
Yeah, it's always, but, it's a great time to be an A-lister and be right, able to negotiate this. I mean, I wonder, Steve might have more insight than I would. I wonder if you are more of an up-and-coming artist and you start to get to that level where you're selling, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 seaters, where you're starting to get a little bigger but not huge, how is this actually going to affect
your career? That's a great point, because it's like, yes, if you're Drake or Taylor Swift, you can basically write your own ticket. And now Apple, for one, is famous for, like, you know, they're paying artists, they're funding their music videos. Artists are getting a lot of money from these places. But if you're a middle-level artist, it's going to hurt if you sign an exclusive deal with Apple and Spotify buries you on their playlists. You have to make a choice.
Right. I think that the middle to lower level artists, people who really need to be heard, unlike Taylor Swift, you know, they want to be everywhere. They just want to be on all the services. They're not even in the discussion of exclusives. I mean, I was surprised by Chance the Rapper. I was surprised that he participated in that Apple Music exclusive as full stop as it was. I thought, you know, maybe they'd fund an album or, you know, a track or a video or something. He struck me as someone who's more in that middle level.
Well, I mean,
if you are trying to get a foothold, you need to be everywhere.
We could almost spend an episode on him, because he's pretty interesting. But in the case against labels,
he doesn't have a label.
He's someone who's become a breakthrough artist and really entered that kind of close to the top level without a label, which is kind of tells you something.
Yeah, that's true.
About,
it was right. What he did was surprising and smart, I thought.
Right.
Yeah. And to be fair, Apple has struck deals on the beat side with, you know, Josh Omi and Saint Vincent and Corey Taylor, people that are names but probably aren't on that Drake Rihanna level,
right?
Who have radio shows, you know, through Apple and are able to get kind of their name out that way. So to be fair, they are at least giving those artists the opportunity to do something cool.
Right. Well, yeah. I guess maybe we should start to wrap it up. Maybe I ask both of you guys, do you see anything changing in any way? Do you see anything coming out of this kind of like heightened streaming war? Steve, do you see anything changing?
I don't know if anything changes because of this Frank Ocean business or the Universal mandate. I do think that we're in a race to sort of have just a few players in the streaming market, assuming that streaming is the thing going forward. I mean, I think it's going to be somebody's going to make a play. Google, Apple, Amazon, maybe, you know, one of those companies, I think, is going to wind up eating all the other companies. And there's going to be one or two major players going forward. I don't think there's going to be room for, you know, a million different streaming companies all elbowing each other out for space for very much longer.
Jason, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I was going to say, I think, well, first of all, you know, a year from now, I wonder if Tidal is even going to exist anymore or be bought out because, as Steve was saying, you know, in the battle, this really has become an Apple-Spotify battle. And Tidal has sort of gotten in on it a little bit, and certainly they've done their share of exclusive deals. But it really has become an Apple-Spotify battle. So I think it's probably, for me at least, a question of when, not if, you know, Tidal sort of gets absorbed by somebody, by one of the bigger fishes. But I think it's also going to be, What I think is going to happen, or what I think will be very interesting to see, is, you know, to what extent are artists going to leverage this new, you know, exclusive economy, for lack of a better phrase, you know, for their own selves. Like, I'm very curious to see how artists that are going to get to that next level, how they're going to use these exclusives to get there. And, you know, I'm sure there are many, many conversations right now that are happening between manager and artist. And, you know, 10 years ago, it was about, you know, what store should we go in, or maybe what label should we go with? And now it's, well, who do you want to do a deal with? And why is Spotify better or more important than Apple? You know, what do you want to go free or do you want to go paid? It's kind of fascinating to see. I think it's going to be a really interesting time to see if you're an artist.
It's almost like artists have to have like a philosophical discussion. Like, do they want to have a label that takes care of all their needs and like makes all the business decisions for them, or do they want to kind of go it alone a little more and then just cut some deal with Apple? So I guess it's good for artists to have options, but we'll see what happens. Well, guys, this is super interesting. Thanks for coming on. Jason Newman.
Thank you for having me.
Steve Knopper, thanks for calling in.
Of course. Thanks. I enjoyed it.
And that's it for Rolling Stone Music Now. If you like what you heard, please leave a rating on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.